You're listening to Eagles Unfiltered.
E-A-T-L-E-S, Eagles!
This podcast is powered by Eagle Maven of Sports Illustrated.
Third down and one. Hurts. Deeping. First down and a touchdown.
Here are your hosts, Ed Kraz and Connor Miles.
Thank you once again for tuning in to another episode of Eagles Unfiltered, powered by Believe Podcast Network and sponsored by BetOnline.ag, the best sports betting website around. Christmas is here. Make some money back from all those presents you bought. Promo code Believe, B-L-E-A-V, to match your initial deposit up to 50% on BetOnline.ag. And remember, of course, BetterHelp.com/Eagles, E-A-G-L-E-S, Eagles, for 10% off your first month of online therapy. The holiday season is tough, especially if you're alone. You're not always alone, though. Remember, we're here to help you guys out. Use that promo link to get 10% off your first month of online therapy. Co-host Connor Miles, my co-host Ed Kraz, as always, we hope you guys have a Merry Christmas this year and a great Happy New Year as well. Hope this holiday season's very, very going very well for you guys. And Ed, let's just get right into it. So this last episode that you and I spoke on, we talked about how this could potentially be the end for Sean Desai. Nick Sirianni, like you said yourself, Nick Sirianni does not like when this team is dead last in any or bottom five in any of the categories they were on defense. They made a switch in defensive play callers. They didn't technically fire Sean Desai, but they really did in an essence and made Matt Patricia the play caller. Now, my one thing that I thought was interesting here was Chris Long made a comment on his podcast that I thought, wow, people should really think about this a little bit more and into the reasoning on why they made this switch from defensive play caller. Is he said that when he met with Matt Patricia, when he went around doing his podcast current training camp tour and he was in Philly and he met with Matt Patricia, he got the feeling that he was plan B if plan A doesn't work out, that he wasn't just a guy being brought in to be a fill a role. He was always the plan B if plan A doesn't work out. And remember, folks, I know you guys remember this if you're an Eagles fan, but for all those out there listening too as well, the Eagles were very late to the party when it came to hiring a defensive coordinator. They were the last team in the league to fill that defensive coordinator spot. So it wasn't like they had a great picking in front of them. And they assumed if Gannon would move on to a head coaching role, they would get Vic Fangio. And that confusion there, if Gannon was leaving or not, and all the stuff behind their back about the Cardinals that they weren't aware of, kind of led Vanga going to Miami Dolphins and not knowing if he would actually have a future with the Eagles. So that all led to them picking defensive coordinator last. And I think that feeds more into this change than people realize when changing defensive play callers. And to be honest, Ed, I don't think it's that much drastic of a change for the Eagles. This is something that a change of this coaching staff itself has gone through before on the offensive side of the ball when Nick Sirianni relinquished play calling to Shane Steichen. Now, would I liked it to happen earlier in the year? Yes. For chemistry and roster purposes and getting everything in motion, yes. But this team's gone through it before. They weathered this storm before, and they turned out beautiful at the end of it. And I'm going to give this one its fair chance, too, as well. Patricia has the experience. He has the resume. We'll see how it goes. I just want to hear your thoughts on it after having a full week to really digest it and to also hear Patricia in his first press conference. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised. I know, you know, we talked about the Desai and that defense being kind of, you know, bottom five in so many important categories and Sirianni not liking that. But, you know, Sirianni said that we're 10-3, you know, that was going into Seattle. You know, they won 10 games and, you know, kind of a midstream switch like this. You know, I know he did it with Steichen handing the play calling to Steichen last year, but I mean, it was kind of surprising to me that they did it. And then, you know, Sirianni kind of, you know, bent the truth a little bit, if you will, by saying that they're not going to change anything when he knew full well that he was going to make that move. He said he made it midweek for game planning purposes, but yet it didn't come out until, you know, the day before the game on Sunday. And, you know, he defended himself by saying, you know, hey, I wanted to let my team know first before I let anybody else know. And, you know, I get it, I guess, but, you know, it was still 4 or 5 days where he sat on the news before the Eagles released it to the national media, which they always do. You know, they always give it to Schefter or Rappaport. They never talk to the local media about any of that stuff. So, you know, it comes out the day before, and I was surprised, you know, and I'm still a little surprised, to be honest. You know, Desai is still the defensive coordinator in name only. He's probably going to be gone at the end of this year. I'm surprised he just didn't say the heck with it and leave now. But I guess he wants to keep his, resume still in good standing for the, the off-season search that he's going to go on. And I'm not sure the Eagles will stick with Patricia going into next season. I think this is going to be an open job for the Eagles to go look for a defensive coordinator. I mean, Patricia's a good fill-in at this point, I guess. The personnel hasn't changed any. Is he going to be different? He didn't blitz at all on that final drive that the Seahawks had. I mean, that is an embarrassment what the Eagles let happen to them in the final minute and 52 of that game trying to protect the 17-13 lead. So, yeah, I was, I thought Patricia's defense, he had done a decent job up until that point as far as getting off the field on third down. Pretty good efficiency on defense in the red zone. They didn't let the Seahawks score when they were in the red zone other than, a field goal. So, those were good things, but you can't give up a 92-yard drive in the final minute 52 to lose a game. You have to do something different. And he was asked about it. And, the press conference was very, he seemed like, he was kind of, humble maybe after some of the things that had happened to him. He was really, high and mighty with the Patriots and Bill Belichick, won a bunch of Super Bowls, won a bunch of division titles, playoff games, and he goes to the Lions and kind of washes out there. And then he goes back to New England and he's running parts of the offense. So I kind of got a sense from him that he's a little more humble. It was interesting to hear him say when he was asked about that drive in Seattle that, hey, I didn't like any of my play calls. I need to do some things differently. So, this is going to, that maybe was a feeling out process for him with this defense. But again, it's like going to battle with one hand tied behind your back with his personnel at linebacker, especially, he's trying to get the back end to gel as one unit, still struggling in that aspect, might not have Slay on Monday. So, I'm not sure how much he's really going to help. I think what's going to help is the schedule gets a little easier. You're not playing Seattle on the road or the Niners or the Cowboys, those teams that have beaten the Eagles the last 3 weeks. So that's going to help. You're playing Tommy DeVito on Monday, Christmas Day, a quarterback that, is a backup. But they lost to a backup in Seattle and Drew Locke. So, you kind of hope that he can find a way to get more out of this defense with his play calling. I don't like the fact that he's not real aggressive. That's the same MO as Desai. So we'll see. I mean, maybe another week will help him kind of settle in a little bit, but I have my doubts as to whether or not he's the answer for the rest of the season. And that's kind of why I'm a little surprised too, that they let go with Desai.
Yeah. I mean, winning teams don't make these type of changes though. I'll tell you right now. I mean, the Ravens did something similar during their Super Bowl season when they got rid of Cam Cameron and they went to Jim Caldwell, but that's an outlier. That's not something that just typically happens when you actually come out at the positive end of it. So I'm with you. I don't think Patricia's going to earn this job either. I mean, we're looking at you're playing Tommy DeVito twice and then Kyler Murray on a very poor Cardinals team. And then what you do in the playoffs is really your resume there. I don't think that's going to be enough for the Eagles, especially when if Robert Saleh gets fired from the Jets, if Dennis Allen gets fired from the Saints, some defensive head coaches that have some strong resumes as defensive coordinator are going to be available for the Eagles. And we all know how they treat that that coordinator job. It's a head coach of a unit. Yeah. They'll go out there and they'll give the money that they need to, as long as the guy comes in and coaches his defense up like Jim Schwartz did the year they brought in Doug Peterson. They coveted Jim Schwartz. They went out there and were aggressive for Jim Schwartz. Same thing for Gannon as well. Gannon was very coveted before he became the Eagles defensive coordinator too as well. So, I mean, the Eagles do what they have to ensure they have a good coach there. And I just don't see Patricia having the time frame to prove to the Eagles that he could be that guy at this point in time.
No, I agree with you there. And, someone pointed out, too, that, this is the first time an NFL team has clinched a playoff spot and fired their defensive coordinator on the very same day, which is interesting. It all happened Sunday, and they really didn't fire their DC. I mean, but really, they just emasculated him by taking away his play calling and kicking him upstairs into the coach's booth.
Yeah, I'd rather be fired.
Right. That's why I'm surprised Desai didn't say, I'll just take whatever buyout's coming to me and, we'll call it a day and I'll move on. But he's sticking around to his credit. He's been, very good about the whole situation. And I'm surprised that he stuck around. But, like I said, give him credit. And he's still here helping, doing what he can. And, trying to make this transition a little easier for Patricia and the whole defense.
Well, now that you're starting to, I don't want to say Desai was the scapegoat because I do think he was a major part of the problem. But now that you've eliminated one part of the problem and you're continuing to have problems, you're going to have to start eliminating other problems on the field. And that's, I mean, James Bradberry, I think, is the first where you start.
Yeah.
Boy, I know he's getting high price tag. Can't really bench him because you're putting rookies out there without Slay, and it's just not what we want as a playoff team. But he's been such a liability this year. Oh, my God.
He really has. I mean, he's just a completely different player than he was last year.
He got beat the full final drive.
Yeah. He got beat by a rookie for a touchdown, Jackson. I mean, Jackson Smith Najigba is a pretty good player, but you're a veteran cornerback. You know you're matched up one-on-one, and he gets beaten by several yards on that play. I mean, just terrible defense. So they're not going to bench him. I mean, Slay's probably not going to play Monday, so you're already running – rookies out there in Keely Ringo and Eli Ricks and Josh Jobe, although Josh Jobe's a second year guy, but they're playing with rookies on the other side. So I don't think you're going to go into a game with Bradberry on the bench and starting two rookies. I mean, he is what he is. He's a veteran. You hope he can find his way through whatever he's struggling with, but it's been a tough season for him. No question.
How do you think they're going to fare against the Giants now?
Well, they should win. I mean, they have a better roster. They're playing at home. It's Christmas Day. I mean, this is a game they need to win, and they won't win it if they turn the ball over. Jalen Hurts can't throw interceptions. He can't fumble the ball. I mean, they have 21 turnovers as a team, which is way more than they had last year as a team going to the Super Bowl. That's the only way the Giants win, is if the Eagles beat themselves, and with penalties, turnovers, and they can do it. I mean, the Eagles, we've seen, they've done it this year already, so – they could lose this game. I would be surprised. I think, they're a better team, and they just need to go out and prove it and get back on the winning track, get a good taste in your mouth, and, try to wrap up this NFC East and get the number two seed, because even the number two seed at this point is in question, with the Lions and the Eagles both having the same record now. So, the Eagles still know what's ahead of them. They're still pretty much a veteran team, and they should win this game. And I think they will win this game. But we've seen them lose before when they beat themselves. They played the Jets. They turned it over three times, committed penalties, and they ended up losing. So, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if they lose, but I think they will win.
That's the most frustrating part about those two losses this year against the Jets and the Seahawks, was just self-inflicted wounds that could have been avoided in order to win those games. That's just the toughest pill to swallow there, especially when you're fighting for that one seed now, and it's probably out of reach, the 49ers. And if you had those two games, even though you lost to the Niners, you'd be in the good position to still get that first seed, especially with how the season's ending. So those losses are very tough. And I wanted to ask you, Jeff McClain put out this recent report about the internal worry over Jalen Hurts' leadership. And I think that story's being a little, I don't know if I want to say it's misconstrued or it's being taken in negatively by the fan base, and I think incorrectly, because I do buy the story. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know, maybe the way he worded it was what threw people off, but every young quarterback goes through this transition period with their franchises when they're becoming the face of the franchise, where you want them to step up and take a higher leadership role than what they've already displayed. I mean, McNabb would throw it with the Eagles when he was young quarterback coming into his own, becoming the face of the franchise. Andy Reid had these concerns with him as well, and that ended up working out because, with time and age and experience, you become the better leader that you are. Fletcher Cox and Jason Kelce weren't given these press conferences and these speeches about this team back in Chip Kelly's early days. Like, they grew into these roles. They grew into this experience. They grew into these circumstances and these adversity situations that they would face. And now they knew how to respond to them. So I have no problem with this report. And I don't think it's a negative. I think it's a positive. I think it's the Eagles just wanting their face of the franchise to become that. When you're handling these three game skids, we don't need to hear about commitment. We need to hear about what you did wrong and what you think you can do better in order to make the team better around you. I mean, that's the leadership role that they're asking for. And I think that he's very capable of doing it. And I just think they want a little bit more consistency from that. And that's what the report's all about. And Patrick Mahomes went through it with the Chiefs. Lamar Jackson recently just went through it with the Ravens. All these young quarterbacks becoming the face of the franchise in this era of football, that's the transition period they go through. And Jalen Hurts is no different here. So I see a lot of worry. I see a lot of doubt over this report and a lot of criticizing of McClain and all that. And I think it's silly, because I think it's just a natural, transition period for a young quarterback to face. This is just it.
Yeah, probably so. I mean, you're not going to make Hurts something he isn't. He's not all of a sudden going to come out and say, yeah, AJ Brown should catch this, or Sua Opeta needs to block better. I mean, you're not going to call people out. I mean, he is what he is. He's not going to change. Now, maybe he feels a little more comfortable as he goes on in his career as to maybe being a little more critical of certain aspects of the game and of himself and saying what he needs to do better. But, he's accountable. He owned up to the, to the fumbles and to the turnovers that he's committing. He said, it's on me. I have to do a better job. And, I listen, I mean, stuff always comes out when there's a losing streak like this. I mean, there was none of this talk when the Eagles had 10 wins. There was none of it last year when Hurts was an MVP candidate. To me, it's just, I guess, probably a lot to do about nothing. It's interesting that leaders would come out and say that, and who the leaders are that may have said it. Lane Johnson's not, he doesn't talk ever. So it could be Kelsey, it could be Brandon Graham. Fletcher Cox doesn't talk very often anymore in the locker
He
room.
worded it as team executive. So
Yeah,
it
and
doesn't
again,
always mean that, I know, but
that's
that's.
kind of an indictment on the front office if they're giving a guy, $255 million and think now all of a sudden, well, geez, he needs to be different. We need to hear more of him being vocal after games and saying different things. I mean, that's an indictment on the front office. So, I don't know. I just don't think it's, I think it's much ado about nothing, to be honest.
I don't think it's that big of a deal. I
Not with
think
that one either. Yeah.
I really I don't want to say it has nothing to do with nothing. It has much to do with nothing, but I just think it's just an organization. And I don't think they may if those comments were to be taken in the context that they were taken in by the story, though. I really don't. I think that's just yeah, we're going through that transition period where a young quarterback's trying to become the face of the franchise and the leader that he is, and he's surrounded by leaders already. That's the thing. I mean, how much more words do we need from this Philadelphia Eagles team to make up for the excuses of the what they're going through? I don't
Yeah.
really need much more. And when he questioned commitment, I know he questioned himself, and I think he questioned others as well just by saying that word. And I think it's fair. I mean, Quez Watkins on that interception by Julian Love, there was PI there, but you would never be able to tell by the way that Quez was acting. And I gotta sell that a little bit. I'm getting held by my jersey collar. I could feel it. Twist when that ball is in the air. The refs on the flag each time. There's a commitment issue for sure. And I mean, again, we're just making excuses now, but I definitely think there is a commitment issue on this team. And when the quarterback says something, that's when people start listening. And I think when he made that comment, that's when this story started really brewing.
Yeah. I mean, listen, yeah, the offense hasn't played well. I mean, they haven't scored over 20 points in three straight games. And, that's not going to win a lot of games in the NFL is if you're scoring 17 points every time out. So the offense does have to get better. And it starts with the quarterback. And he simply has to play better. He has to take better care of the football. And, I think things will work themselves out. We won't, if they win these last three games, we won't hear any more about the leadership struggles, whatever it is that, the front office is saying about your quarterback. I mean, all they need to do is win a game, and Hurts has to take better care of the football, and all that's gone away. I mean, it's so tiresome when the team goes into a little funk like this, and all of a sudden your quarterback is not a good leader. All this stuff starts to come out. To me, it's ridiculous. Just play the season out. He's going through a little funk. Okay. Doesn't mean the Eagles are wrong giving him a contract extension. I mean, he's like you say, he's a young guy. 25 years old, and he'll play his way through this.
Well, I agree with you too, but you're right. The turnovers are killing them this year, and
Yeah.
it starts with him. And I like to end the show real quick. I really liked what I heard from Nick Sirianni this week, just for all intent and purposes. I know people were bashing him over the PI. We were going for that because we wanted to get PI. I thought that was silly too. I just don't understand how you had the Buffalo game right in front of you, the perfect script from that Buffalo game right in front of you, and you played for the defensive pass interference. That doesn't make sense to me. You have the best kicker. You have arguably the best kicker in the league. Take the dump off to Kenny Gainwell to get the yards to at least get him in field goal position, or throw the out route to Devontae Smith and get an even more favorable field goal position. That should have been the call. If he was pushed to make his first read and go down to AJ Brown to get that defensive pass interference, it's silly. It's just silly. That was just bonehead coaching there. So that's all I could say about that. But the rest of the accountability that I saw from Nick this week, I liked it a lot. Because a lot of people want to point the finger at Brian Johnson. You and I have talked about this multiple times. We can get red in the face talking about this. I really like that Nick stepped up this year and really, I mean, this week and really said, Brian's always going to be the one that takes the blame, but it's my fault. This is my offense. I really liked hearing that. That's what I always felt from this in the beginning. I thought Brian Johnson was really the scapegoat to all this. And can he be a better play caller? Sure. Will he be better? I believe so. That's the problem. I think he can get better over time. We just have to give him the patience and the room to grow and become one. But he doesn't get better unless his offense does. And this is Nick's offense.
Exactly. Yeah, that was a weird thing about, you know, and I asked Hurts in the press conference this week if he even saw Kenny Gainwell, or it was Kenny Gainwell. He said no, he didn't see him. I mean, he was right there, a little 3 yards away. Could have just flipped it to him and he maybe gains 20, 30 yards and gets closer to field goal position. He had all green grass ahead of him, but Hurts never saw him because the play was designed to go down the field. And that's kind of a worry with this offense. They keep talking about wanting more explosive plays. You know, the Seahawks played, you know, a too high safety most of the game and took away that deep pass. And the Eagles still tried to, you know, pick up these explosive plays. You know, we saw Hurts not see Devontae Smith on an open cross underneath on a third down throw, and then he underthrows A.J. Brown down the sideline. I mean, listen, you have to just take what's there and not worry about, hey, we need an explosive play here. You know, the explosive plays will come in the course of running your offense. You just can't go out and seek them and force them. You have to wait for them to come to you. And that's my concern, is the Eagles aren't doing that. Hurts isn't doing that. I'm not sure Johnson and Sirianni are doing that when they're calling the plays. I just think that that's this big push, is to look for the explosive play, and Hurts is going to gun it. He's going to chuck it deep. And if there's two safeties back there, then, you know, hey, it's up to the guy, the receiver like Brown or Smith or whoever the third receiver is, to find a way to make a play, get open, separate. And that's hard to do when you're double covered or triple covered. That's my concern, is you need to take what's there underneath, if it's there, dump offs if they're there, and not worry about forcing the ball deep to Smith or Brown.
Now, when I say this, I don't believe it'll end the same way at all. I really don't. I truly don't. I truly don't believe this. But this hero ball that from Jalen Hurts this year is reminiscent to what Carson Wentz was doing in 2020. I mean, not even just 2020, but that was reminiscent of what Carson Wentz was doing post Frank Wright.
Mm-hmm.
There was always a coach there that reeled Carson back in. I mean, he didn't have him that long, but it was Frank. And, you know, Shane Steichen was Jalen Hurts' most consecutive tenured offensive coordinator in a while since high school.
Yeah.
So to have that comfortability and that chemistry, there was some, you can definitely see it from last year compared to this year. Someone was reining Hurts in. Someone was saying, like, this is what you should be doing, and this is how you can be safe with the ball, and this is the smart stuff that we should be taking in order to be productive. And that saying is not being done this year. That coaching is not being done this year because there's too much hero ball being put on.
Mm-hmm.
Play. And that's where Brian Johnson and Nick Sirianni had to figure out what Shane did perfectly to get to Jalen, to make him, you know, flow incredibly well. And it really is motion. It really is. That's what they're really missing. Making things easier for Jalen is what's missing this year. And a lot of that has to do with motion.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't motion anymore last year when they went to the Super Bowl. But, you know, again, I think defenses adjust, and now you have to adjust back and maybe show a little motion, even if you're not gaining anything from it. At least you're moving the defense around. Maybe they're opening up something that you didn't see by being stagnant in your offensive set.
Exactly.
You know, I don't know. I think this whole emphasis on explosive plays is killing them. You know,
it is.
They're trying to force explosive plays. And sometimes they're not there. The defenses know what's coming. They know what the Eagles want to do, and they're taking it away. And the Eagles aren't adjusting and saying, all right, we'll take the dump off. We'll take the shallow cross. We'll take the over the middle with Dallas Goedert. They're not doing it. They just insist on throwing it deep, trying to make the big play, and that's risky.
Yeah, I mean, these teams are playing these safeties deep for a reason. They don't fear the Eagles' rushing attack. I wouldn't either if I was playing against them, because they don't really utilize it well enough. And they know they want to go for the big play with AJ and Devontae. So they play two safeties deep. And that's really where, when Nick Bosa said we provided the blueprint for the Eagles, no, he didn't. The Eagles provided the blueprint for themselves when they said just play two safeties deep against us and you're good.
Yep.
That's what it is. Nobody fears their rushing attack. Nobody, because it's so underutilized, so inconsistent. Why would you? And when that's why DeAndre Swift has the big runs that he has, is because these safeties are so deep, playing for the big shot. And that's how you beat the Eagles. That's really is. That's how you beat the Eagles. And it's working for during this three game skid so far. So hopefully, you know, what the best thing I thought about when they were going to Patricia was, all right, now this team is seeing their faults and they're going back to the basics. I didn't really see that on offense against Seattle. So hopefully this time around, with all the, you know, the turmoil and the three game skid, they really wake up this week during practice. Let's go back to the basics and let's play basic fundamental football. make things easier for our quarterback. Let's motion. Let's lean on the rushing attack. Something like that. That's all we can hope for. I'm not expecting it at this point, but that's all we can hope for. All right. What is your score prediction, Ed?
I think the Eagles will I think they'll find a way to win. I think they'll win like 24 to 16, somewhere along those lines. I think they'll get back in the winning track, though, against the Giants at home on Christmas Day.
I could be wrong, but I think they're 4.5 favorites, the Giants. Might be a little bit more. Could be wrong.
I'm not sure.
But I also have them being in a tight game against the Giants because, you know, say what you will about the Giants and their record this year and what Brian Daboll's like kind of failing to do, but Wink Martindale's not failing at all. Wink Martindale's been great for them. Their defense is pretty solid. So I think it's going to be a tough game as well, and I think he's going to have a good game plan against Jalen Hurts. I think it's going to be 21-17 Eagles.
Let's hope.
Let's hope they get over 17. That's all that matters. Yep. All right, guys, that's going to do it for us. Thank you again for tuning in for Eagles Unfiltered. You guys have a wonderful holiday season. Enjoy the time with your families as well. We'll see you all maybe before the new year or right after it. Thank you guys again for tuning in. Have a great one.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.